Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. I had an amazing experience. That's probably not the right word for it. Cyrus, did you see what I posted yesterday evening on Twitter by chance?
I did, and I'm really curious about what you experienced.
Yeah, it was very unsettling, and I'll just basically say what happened. So Nancy and I were in our car, and we were passing through a fairly busy section of a city. It wasn't like a super downtown area, but it was not suburbia. So businesses, buildings, lots of people on the sidewalks, plenty of traffic in the streets. And so we were at like one or two cars, maybe one car, let's say, before the intersection crosswalk. So there was a person ahead of us. There's a red light. We're about behind that person. And to my left, a guy, and I would guess he was maybe like early 20s, perhaps, looked like a college student. And he came from my left walking toward me, toward us, but he was kind of catty-corner from us. And as he's walking across the crosswalk, a car from our left on the street that's perpendicular to us on the right side, it's going through the intersection and probably no more than, 20 miles an hour, probably nothing more than that, but fast enough. It comes around the corner, comes around in front of us, and just takes this guy out. Now, I need to tell you right up front, he survived it. But I was looking at him. I was watching him. You know how you look out the window, and I'm watching this guy crossing the street. The woman in the other car obviously didn't see him. She comes around pretty fast, but not beyond the speed limit. She hits him, and it's just like what you've seen in movies. It was so amazing to me that I watched him. He got hit. He sort of turned at the last minute, saw that she was there. He kind of cried out. She hit him. He flew up in the air. And the picture that I posted on Twitter is not the picture of the event. I didn't have, any way to take a picture of it. But that's what it looked like. So the guy was up in the air above the car, and he did an end over. He did a, somersault in midair. And then he landed not on the car hood. He landed on the pavement next to the car. And it all happened in the space of 2 seconds or less. It was just so fast.
Did time slow down for you while you were watching it?
Yeah, no, not really. I've heard of people where that does happen to them, and in my case, it didn't. I didn't get tunnel vision. I didn't see it frame by frame. I can picture the whole thing in my mind. I can see the whole thing happening, but it happened so quickly that it was very shocking. And of course, everybody who was standing there on the street corner was shocked. The woman who was in the car was shocked. And it was for just a moment where you just not freeze, but you just don't know what to do. And then, of course, immediately people start rushing over to this guy. It was within maybe, 20 seconds of this happening, 15 seconds maybe at the most, that I was on the phone with 911 because I called them immediately. And probably other people were calling too. But they took all the information. I gave them the intersection. They said, okay, we're going to get somebody over there right away. What's your name? What's your phone number? In case somebody needs more information, we'll call you back. And they never called me back. There were plenty of witnesses. The police lady, she said, did the driver leave the scene? I said, no, looks like she's parked off to the side. And so inside of 60 seconds, that phone call was done. And the most amazing thing, Cyrus, was that this young man, you know, as because I was blocking traffic at that point, and so I had to move. I had to go beyond where we were. I couldn't just stay there. There's nowhere to, you know, to park or anything. So I glanced over at him. I couldn't really see him very well because he was on the other side of the car. The car was now between my car and him. But as I, as we moved forward, I could see he was sitting up and he was actually talking to people, and they were clustered around. And I'm assuming that, you know, the human body being what it is, it might have been shock. He might not have felt any pain if indeed he had been injured. There was just no way to know. I didn't see any blood. He was still on the ground, but sort of like up on one arm, and he was talking. So that led me to believe that he survived. I don't know, you know, what happened after that, but it was very shocking.
I don't know if it matters or not, but whose fault was it? What, did he not look, or was the other car merging?
I think
at
it
the
must be
time?
The other car. Well, I mean, these are complicated because some, as you know, some of these intersections will have a green turn arrow. So it might have been that her arrow had turned green for her to turn left into the intersection. It's possible that she just, you know, didn't turn in a legal way. Maybe it was against a red light. I don't know. I doubt she went against a red light. I just don't know. And I don't know whether or not the crosswalk was lit up for pedestrians to go. So he might have been not following the rules. And I just don't know how they sort these things out. But, yeah, it was so weird to me that I almost posted something about it almost immediately as soon as we got home. But I wanted to think about it for a while and process it. And so when I put it up on Twitter, if anyone wants to see the picture that I chose, you'll see it on Twitter. And the reason I chose this picture is because it shows this guy, you know, like up in the air, head over heels above this car. Now, this looks to me like it might have been Photoshopped. I can't tell if that's real or not. But that's what it looked like. It looked exactly like that. I mean, that could have been it. So after processing and thinking about it, and I said in my Twitter tweet that I was going to discuss it on the program today, this is what I've come away from that with. This is my takeaway. And that is the suddenness of how life can change in the blink of an eye, literally in the blink of an eye, because that's how long this took. That woman's life changed. She now has this. This is going to be, I guess, in some way or another on her record, hitting a pedestrian. I suppose you get a ticket for that. Maybe worse. I don't know. God forbid, if he had died, she would have had that on her mental, you know, she would have remembered that for the rest of her life. That would have been on her. I mean, every so often when I would hear stories about a driver going too fast through a neighborhood and runs over and kills a child who runs out into traffic. And even if they determine in court that this was an accident, I've always thought to myself, man, I'm so glad I'm not in that position, because I wouldn't want to have that on my mind all the time. You know, that this had happened, however long ago it had happened.
Yeah. I ran over a cat when I was 18. It was 4th of July and I was coming home from work. And the fireworks went off. Cat ran out in the street. And it was my stepdad's cat, and it tore me up forever. And it was like an old cat. I mean, it tore me up. So I can't imagine taking someone's life. I'm teaching my son how to drive right now, and which is a terrifying.
Tell him this story. Tell him about what I saw.
Absolutely. And I tell him, it's like, look, man, you're driving a 3,000-pound death machine. Every second matters.
That is so true. Yeah, I mean, it didn't shake me up. Like, it didn't make me distraught, or it was nothing like that. I mean, I don't mean to blow it out of proportion, but you can't help but have some, you know, it has an impact on you. No pun intended. I mean, it just does. And to see that happen. So as you and I were talking, I just wanted to sort of share this with you, and that is that my takeaway is that how quickly life can change in the blink of an eye. And if he had been killed, I mean, that's it for him. He's done. Now, that of course didn't happen, but who knows? Maybe he does have a bad injury, and maybe he was in shock, and that's why he could sit up and talk, and not realizing that he had a broken leg, maybe, or that there was something else. Maybe he hit his head. I know a man who got hit by a car, and you know, he was similar situation. He was hit by a car walking across a crosswalk. The car hit him and threw him, and eyewitnesses say that it threw him, you know, like 20 feet, landed on the ground, and he hit his head on the curb. Now, it didn't kill him. I mean, he walked away from it. A few scrapes and cuts and bruises and things like that. But his personality changed after that. And he wasn't the same kind of happy-go-lucky guy that his friends knew. He wasn't, you know, the same. He was the same, but he wasn't the same. And I think people attribute it to getting hit on the head when he got hit by that car. It wasn't his fault. He didn't do anything wrong. But in the blink of an eye, in a split second, his life changed. And not for the better in that regard. So for me, and this is why I wanted to share it with everybody, it's a great reminder in a very grim sort of way to always be ready, always have your life in order, always be prayed up, you know, always be in the state of grace, always be prepared to go. I don't want to dwell on that in any morbid way, not for myself or for anyone else, but I mean, it's just common sense. And for me, that was a reminder. And all the people who expressed, you know, their concerns, I hope he's okay. I just want to allay any concerns that people have. If they saw what I posted on Twitter yesterday, by all accounts, everything that I could see gave me the impression that he survived and may not, in fact, have been injured. And who knows, maybe it was his guardian angel who had stepped in at that very moment. And even though he flew through the air, do you ever see the movie Meet Joe Black, Cyrus? And it starred, who was
Brad
it?
Brad Pitt and Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins. Yeah, and there's a scene where Brad Pitt, in his initial, you know, persona, winds up getting hit by a car. Actually, I think he gets hit by two cars. But it's very shocking because he gets hit and he flies up in the air, and that's what this was like. So always be ready. Always be ready to go. And also, let's another thing for me, don't take life for granted. Don't take life the way it is for you right now for granted. And I don't mean you personally, Cyrus. I just mean rhetorically you. Don't take anything for granted. Don't take the lives of your friends and loved ones for granted. I mean, that young man had a mom and a dad, and or has a mom and a dad and brothers and sisters and maybe a girlfriend or a wife and colleagues at work and fellow students if he's in college, and their world would have changed dramatically if something bad happened to him. So there it is. That was it. It was sort of in me, and I wanted to get it out, and I wanted to share it because if nothing else, it seems to me that that was a good reminder to me, and I just wanted to pass it on. Have you ever seen anything like that, Cyrus?
Not that I remember. I guess not. I can't imagine.
Good for you.
I don't want to see it.
You know, another thing that occurred to me, the billions of times I've seen that very same thing in movies, and it never fazed me.
Yep.
Because it's fake. You know, that's a stuntman. That's not real. So and that's what was kind of weird about it too, is that seeing it happen in front of me was just like seeing the way they do it in a movie. So they know physics, and they know the dynamics of the human body and what will happen and what things will look like, so they can recreate that in the movies. And when I saw it right in front of me 10 feet away, it was just like that. It was just as if it were a movie, but it was real.
Without the soundtrack and sound effects.
Nancy and I, we were both like, what? And of course, all the people standing around the guy had the same reaction. I did watch, I must admit, I did keep an eye on, I wanted to see who was driving the car. And it was, she looked Asian. I couldn't quite tell. It was all happening so quickly. I'm looking at the guy, looking at her. She got out. She came around the front of the car. She looked down at him. She saw, and I think she might have even talked to him. And then she got back in her car, and I thought, uh-oh, is she going to flee the scene? But she didn't. She just sort of moved the car out of the traffic and over to the side. That was good, because that would have really compounded the problem if she had taken off. And then we moved on, and that was it. It all happened in such a short period of time, but it made a big dent. And, wanted to share that.
When was the last time you were in a, have you been in a car accident?
I have been, but not in, in any recent decades. So I had a, I was in a couple car accidents when I was a kid. You know, one was a fender bender that I remember being when I was about three. Another time I was about eight or nine, and we were driving. My dad was driving. It was at night, and we were in one of those, you know, those old station wagons that were popular in the 60s and 70s before minivans came along. And you could fold all the seats down, so it would be like one long surface behind the front seat.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we had one of those. And it was like a town and country or whatever it was. I don't remember now. But we had all the seats folded down, meaning that there were no seat belts. It was just this flat surface. And all of us kids were sacked out with our pillows and blankets because we were driving through the night to go who knows where. And I was sitting against the tailgate. I was in the very back sitting against the tailgate because, you know, it wasn't my time to go to bed. Next thing I know, I'm flying through the air. It's a terrible crashing sound, glass breaking. It's very sudden. But I was aware of it as it was happening. And everything came to a halt. And, you know, we're all crying. And we realized it was a car accident. What had happened was a few cars ahead of my dad on the freeway, that car slammed on the brakes or stopped suddenly. And so then the car behind it hit it. So it was a chain reaction. And as I recall, we were like maybe the third or fourth car behind that. So we hit the next car. And then the woman behind us hit us, but apparently she didn't put on her brakes. So she hit us at 60 miles an hour. And nobody was killed, thankfully. Nobody seriously hurt that I know of anyway. I had some cuts and bruises and fat lip. And it was traumatic, but that was it. Nothing else really happened. So other than that, maybe a fender bender or two when I was a teenager, but thankfully, knock on wood, nothing else since then.
Wow. Yeah.
How about you?
I've been in a couple. We were hit once. My wife and I were coming off of an interstate, and a car ran a red light and smashed into us. And I saw the lady have her, she was on her cell phone. Like I saw it while she was hitting us.
She was distracted.
She was totally distracted and she ran a red light. And so we got out and she was really nice and she was like apologizing. And then the police showed up and her whole story changed. And I wasn't on my cell phone and my light was green. And I'm like, what? I couldn't believe it. Hmm. I mean, she lied. I mean, absolutely lied. Yeah. And then it ended up being a no fault accident and it ended up costing us a lot of money and our car was damaged. And so that wasn't a good experience. And then
how old were you? Were you tempted to say to the police officer, she's lying? It didn't happen that way.
Oh, I did say that. I did say that. Yeah. And another time when I was a little kid, we were hit, and I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and we were in some beater car, and I actually, the door opened, and I fell out of, the car, and
out of the car?
The door opened, so it's not like I went through the window, but the side door, I was in the passenger seat, and the door opened and I fell out and I guess I hit my head. I don't remember any of this. I've been told that this happened.
That's so why you don't remember any of this.
That's right. It might explain a lot, actually. Now that I'm thinking about it.
Okay, I can start factoring that in now. If, yes. You know, when anything happens, I'll...
That's right.
Well, he did have that one accident.
He did hit his head.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I love it when I learn new things about you, Cyrus.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I love it when I share things and then I immediately regret sharing them. That's my favorite.
And it's not only permanent, it's also public. Everyone, everywhere
everybody
now
knows it, right? I forget that
we have to take a break.
All by myself.
I know that feeling. We're going to take a break, but I want to come back to your phone calls. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Wow, Cyrus, edgy. I see what you're doing here. Whoa.
I hit my head. I don't know what I'm doing.
I'll be right back.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Cyrus, you are brazen this morning.
We gotta have fun and laugh. I deal with stuff by laughing and having fun.
Is this how you process
it
things
it's
like
so
that?
Much better than crying and being upset. Like it's such a healthier way for me to go through my life. So
you're laughing outside, crying on the inside.
Oh, I lost you there, Patrick. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, there you are. What'd you say?
Yeah, you're laughing on the outside but crying on the inside.
That's right. Yeah, it's you can laugh. You can look at a lot of things and you can laugh or cry. And I choose to laugh because it's less messy, and it's easier to stop.
I always had you pegged as a guy who was laughing on the outside and sleeping on the inside.
Thanks.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Ed now in Chicago. Good morning, Ed.
Hey, how you doing, Patrick? I wanted to share with you, you were mentioning earlier about the young man who, I guess, survived an accident. It could have been the guardian angel. Yeah. I truly believe in that because this was a while back when my uncle had cancer, and he would always want to go to my mom's house. So my cousin would always bring him to the house. One day my cousin had to work, and I had to go and pick him up. You know, my aunt asked if I could pick him up, and I did. Unfortunately, he was wheelchair bound, so to get him down the stairs, I thought it was better if I had his back towards me, so when we're going down the step, I could use my legs to kind of balance him, bringing him down the stairs. My feet got caught with one of the metal spikes of the wheel. Mm-hmm. And we both fell backwards by four steps. And I felt the presence of somebody just holding me because all the weight was going to fall on me. Mm-hmm. I just felt the presence that they laid me down. And then when we both fell, we got up like if nothing ever happened. When my family heard that, they were like, nothing happened to you? Nothing happened to you? I said, no, I felt the presence of somebody just holding me and just kind of like laying me down, where the impact of his 200 pounds falling on me with the steps, and I came out of there unscathed. And I truly believe that, you know, we have to pray to our guardian angels, because that's the only thing I could think of that saved me, because everybody looks, how did you not get hurt? I said, I'm telling you, I felt the presence, somebody just holding me and laying me down. So for listeners out there, always pray to your guardian angels.
That's an excellent point. Angel of God, my guardian dear, to whom God's love commits me here, ever this day be at my side, to light, to guard, to rule, and guide. Amen. Yeah, I'm with you, Ed. And I pray that my prayer to my guardian angel numerous times a day. So I've tried in my older years, in a way that I didn't do so well as when I was a kid, but I tried to be very aware, conscious of my guardian angel's presence, and to ask him to help me, to protect me, to guide me. And like you, I mean, there have been a few situations in my life, for what it's worth, where I have had the similar sense that my guardian angel was helping me. This may or may not be one of them, I don't know, but when I was a lad of about 12, I guess, I grew up in Southern California, Orange County to be exact, and at that time, there were vast tracts of land that were entirely empty. It was just like foothills and rattlesnakes and brush and things like that. So there wasn't much out there. So one day, a buddy of mine and I were out with our bows and arrows, and it was a real bow, and I had a metal tipped arrows. I got at Kmart, and we were out plinking around shooting at things, and I was up on the top of a hill, and he was down at the bottom. And so I got on my belly and I inched forward toward the edge. It was sort of a graded slope because they were going to be building houses there at some point. So he was probably maybe, 80 feet below me. And so I wanted to surprise him. So I was on my belly and I'm kind of inching forward so he wouldn't be able to see me come out over the hill. And so I just stuck my head out just far enough like a turtle so that I could see him down there. and I was going to call down to him. And somehow, I don't know what happened, but I could see he had just fired an arrow. So he was firing an arrow up, and I don't think I had the quick reflexes to do what happened, and that is I kind of turned my head and turned my body to the side, and I felt the wind of the arrow go right past my face. And I realized that, you know, if I hadn't moved my head that split second, I would have taken an arrow right in the face, and I wouldn't be here, obviously. So was that my guardian angel? I don't know, but I'd like to think so. Hey, Ed, I appreciate the call. Thank you. Can you imagine that, Cyrus? The kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Reflexes that one would have to have for that to take place and not get hit by an arrow, because they're traveling pretty quickly. And I just, it really shook me up, because I realized that I only had a split second to even think the thought that he had just fired this arrow. Next thing I know, it's passing my face. Weird.
Yeah,
it is. That's the sound it made, by the way, when it passed my face. It went, whew. Yeah, it was weird.
That's enough.
I think I went home at that. I really do. I think I went. I was like, I'm done.
I'm done. My hands go up in the air, and I'm out of here.
Yeah. And I don't know if I ever went out with a bow and arrow again. Certainly not with that kid. That's for sure.
Right. No kidding.
Aim somewhere else, please. 888-914-9149. How about Ryan now in Missoula, Montana? Good morning, Ryan.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Pleasure to talk to you once again. I always like to compliment you a little bit. I want to say thank you for all the work you've done. You've actually really helped me in my education, because I know knowledge doesn't come naturally. And one of those days you really put your head down and got your stuff together. So, you know, you really inspire me become intelligent. And I think there's going to be a lot of calls for your canonization someday with all the work that you've done and all the people you've helped. And, you know,
I'm only laughing because I appreciate your kind sentiments. I truly do. And I know you're being sincere, but I'm
for
laughing
me,
because
be
I know it'll never happen.
For me, you'll be the patron saint of day old podcast. So, but anyway,
there you go. Hey,
yesterday,
I've got my niche. Okay.
Yesterday you were talking to a really great caller about the use of the word father and the classic non-denominational argument of father saying that, you know, you shall not call anybody other father. You said, well, then you can't get a master's mm-hmm. degree, you can't be a teacher. Can you go into more detail about why we actually refer to the priest as father, and how it is even more of a, you know, how and explain that in a way that also refrains back to that verse as sort of like another argument to be in more detail about why we refer to priest as father? Is it linguical? Is it, how do we do that?
Sure. Yeah. It actually goes back to St. Paul. St. Paul himself said in 1 Corinthians 3, he said, though you may have many guides to Christ, yet you do not have many fathers, for I became your father in Christ Jesus through the gospel. So he says that in 1 Corinthians 4, verse 15. Did I say 3? I'm sorry, I meant 4. 1 Corinthians 4, 15. For though you have countless guides to Christ, yet you do not have many fathers. For I became your father in Christ Jesus through the gospel. Then verse 16 says, that's the very next verse, therefore I urge you to imitate me. So two things that those who have commented, like the church fathers and others who have commented on this passage, point out. Number one, obviously St. Paul was not their physical father. He was not biologically their father. He was a celibate man. He had no children. So here he's referring to, number one, the fatherly role that the priest, and certainly, and maybe in an even more intense way, the bishop has with the flock, meaning that he is truly a spiritual father to them. And when you think about, and I don't know if you yourself are a father, but you know how fathers, they defend their families, they feed their families, they make sure that everything that their children need, for example, is taken care of. That's what a good father does. And so St. Paul is identifying himself in a spiritual sense as their father. So he's identifying the role that he plays as priest and bishop for them as a father. And then he says, this is the second thing, he says, I urge you to imitate me. therefore, I'd rather, yeah, he says, I urge you, therefore, to imitate me. So one can glean from that, I think, not only his desire that they imitate his virtue and imitate his constancy and imitate his faith in Christ and imitate his, you know, willingness to suffer for the truth, but also he's saying, I'm calling myself your father. I want you to imitate me. And we can also readily see there the foundation of the custom that arose very quickly of the earliest Christians calling priests and bishops, and especially bishops, calling them father. It was a custom that grew up very quickly, and it's traceable, I believe, biblically to this passage. And that's where this comes from. It's recognizing that fatherly role and how, just as a father gives life to his child, obviously with the mother's participation, so too the priests give us life through the waters of baptism. They bring us to new life in Jesus Christ, the rebirth of baptism. They feed us, as every good father does. He makes sure that there's food on the table for his children, and the priests feed us with the bread of life, the manna that came down from heaven, Jesus himself. Good fathers will take care of their children when they're sick, and they will get them medicine and make sure that they've got the healing that they need. And the same is true for our fathers in the faith, the priests who provide us with the sacraments of confession and holy anointing in which our sins are forgiven. So there's more that one could say, but I think you see the parallels here between earthly fatherhood, and the spiritual fatherhood of the priest. And that is what St. Paul was pointing to. So that's where it comes from.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate that. And can you explain why we go back to St. Paul so often? Why do we take his words for granted so much?
When you say, why do we take them for granted, can you tell me what you mean by that?
Well, how come St. Paul has such authority just because his words are in the Bible?
Okay, that's a fair question. Well, it's interesting to note that, as you know, St. Paul, originally known by his Jewish name of Saul, he was a Roman citizen. That's why he also had the Romanized name of Paul. Jesus didn't change his name the way he changed Simon's to Peter. But in any case, Saul, originally as a Pharisee, was a persecutor of Christians. And if you read in the book of Acts how he got his start, he was involved with rounding them up and killing them. And when St. Stephen was stoned, the first martyr of the church, we're told that Saul was there and he was keeping an eye on everybody's cloaks that they had set down on the ground so they could grab a rock and kill St. Stephen with. So he was in on the initial persecution against the church. So when he had his conversion on the road to Damascus and he was confronted in this mystical way by the Lord who spoke to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Who are you, sir? I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. So Jesus identifies himself so closely with his followers that he says, why are you persecuting me? So you know the story. Saul has his conversion. It takes some time. The scales literally fall from his eyes after being blinded for 3 days. He has his profound conversion. He tells us that he went out into the desert in Arabia for, I think he was there for about 3 years roughly. So he made a long retreat out in the wilderness. Then he came back and he started telling the Christians, I believe in Jesus now. Jesus appeared to me. This is what happened. And you know what? They didn't believe him. There was a lot of skepticism. Like, well, right. You were killing us 3 years ago and now you want us to believe that you're one of us? So he tells us also he went up to Jerusalem and he spent, I think it was maybe 2 weeks or so with Simon Peter and the other apostles, and we can glean from that that he did so. He conferred with them, he says, and that's suggestive that he wanted to make sure that what he was saying about Jesus comported with what they were saying about Jesus, to make sure that he wasn't saying something other than what the apostles were teaching. And it's notable that he checked in with the Pope first before he did anything else, and then he went his way on his public ministry. So in terms of his role, it was not immediately recognized. But once it was recognized, in fact, once that instance took place where he rebuked Peter because Peter had been acting hypocritically, he tells us this in Galatians, that how Peter knew very well that the Judaizers were wrong and that you didn't need to be Jewish in order to be Christian. The men didn't need to be circumcised first before they could be baptized. And there was a faction in the early church that held to that view. They were known as the Judaizers. And his epistle to the Galatians is all about condemning that heresy. So we're told that St. Peter, who was eating with the Jews, because he was a Jew, obviously, and then when, he was eating with Gentiles, rather, and when the Jews came, he stopped eating with the Gentiles for fear of offending the Jews. And so St. Paul rebuked him, and he says, I withstood him to his face. I told him to his face, you're being a hypocrite, because you know God gave you, of all of us, he gave you personally this revelation that there was no need anymore to keep kosher and the circumcision laws and those other things. God had given St. Peter that revelation in Acts chapter 10. So St. Paul rebuked him and said, you're acting like a hypocrite. Well, the reason I dwell on that passage or that topic is because I think that too is a kind of turning point where the rest of the church recognized, well, even Peter is willing to listen to Paul. Even Peter, the chief of the apostles, is willing to accept this rebuke from St. Paul. So it seems to me that that must have further solidified his authority. And so that, combined with the fact that St. Paul was the most prolific writer of the New Testament writers, he had a kind of pride of place. It didn't put him above St. Peter, but he certainly had far more to say by virtue of the inspiration of the Holy Spirit that was inspired and therefore was part of Scripture. So we accept his authority because Jesus chose him, appeared to him, converted him, revealed things directly to him, as he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, that he received this directly from the Lord about what took place at the Last Supper. He wasn't there, but Jesus gave him this direct revelation. And the Christians recognized this, and they also recognized how hard he worked for the gospel and all the sufferings that he went through, and he was the real deal. And it was from all of that that the early church recognized this man as an apostle. So I've got to take a break, but I hope that's helpful to you, and I do appreciate the kind words, Ryan. Thank you for that. Let's talk again. 888-914-9149. That's my number. You can call now, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
Soak up that vibe. All right. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We have lines open right now. Not too many of them, but you can grab one. 888-914-9149. How about Roy now in Bellflower, California? Good morning, Roy. Welcome.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment. I worked emergency trauma services for 47 years, and the topic that you were talking about is you were right on, you know, because I saw so many people not make it home. You know, they get up, they put on their tie, they get ready to go to work, and something happens, and they find themselves in the ER, trauma services in a horrible state, and I'll never forget it, you know, and the thing about it is now I suffer because the images of it continue to return, you know, and people don't realize at any moment they could lose their life, you know, and whether it was an industrial accident, a car accident, or due to violence, you know, immediately when these patients would come in, I'd automatically start saying my Our Father, saying my rosary, doing anything and everything I could to make sure that God was present to guide our hands, and then even baptizing the dead, you know. And now that I'm retired, I still see these images. It's been very difficult, you know. I go to Mass during the week now, and I'm so happy I can.
How long were you in E? How long you worked in an emergency room? Okay, so you saw everything.
Trauma surgery, yeah. I was trained at County USC And then later on, I worked at Memorial Hospital in Long Beach and St. Francis in Lynnwood. I always held down two jobs because my wife and I have a...
That's where I was born, Roy. Seriously. I was born at the St. Francis Medical Center in Lynnwood.
That's then you must have known Sister Elizabeth, the founder, because Sister Elizabeth would always go into the nursery first thing in the morning to give coffee and toast to all the nurses there.
Well, I was a newborn, so I probably didn't know. Yeah. I probably didn't know anybody the day or two that I was there. But yeah, what an interesting. So you were there in the trauma surgery, and by that I'm assuming that's gunshots and car accidents and crazy mishaps and things like that.
The gang violence, you know, the horrible things due to violence, acts of violence, whether it was domestic or whatever, you know, but. I just want to finish by saying God bless these men and women who serve us in the police force, because, you know, we always see what happens, what they're forced to do in the street, you know, to protect life. But you never see what happens to them on the daily basis, because they used to come in, too, as patients, you know, with their combat wounds or fractures or stab wounds, you know, things that, you know, were, you know, because they were trying to save a life or... In not trying to escalate it, and they themselves would get injured horribly to the point even sometimes they'd be disabled for life. But, you know, you never hear about that. But,
you know what this makes me think about? Yeah, this makes me think about something, Roy, and this may be helpful to you. As you know from experience, the things that you see, so the stimulus that we receive, the stimuli that we receive through our senses is how we develop in our imagination pictures or videos, so to speak, of our own experiences. You can imagine what a pizza looks like. You can imagine what a pizza tastes like. You can imagine the sensation of putting a nice hot slice of pizza in your mouth because you've done it before. Your senses have that now in your mind. It's on your hard drive, so you can recall that at a moment's notice. It's the way God made us as human beings. But there's a little known remedy for the traumatic things that are stored on your mental hard drive, Roy, and that is your guardian angel. And one of the duties that your guardian angel will perform for you is to help you purify your memory. And so my humble advice would be, in your devotion to your guardian angel, if you so choose, make that an intention that you ask of him, that he will begin defragging your hard drive and start to eliminate some of those more bothersome images that float up in front of your mind at all the wrong moments. This is also true, everybody, for pornography. It can be true of any number of things, but pornography, of course, leaves an indelible mark on your mind. And those of you who know, you know that, I mean, maybe an image that you saw 30, 40 years ago, maybe more, it's still there. And sometimes those images can come up at all the wrong times, especially when, like, you're trying to pray or something like that. So that's my humble advice. Ask your guardian angel to help purify your mind, and he will, because that's one of the duties that angels can perform for you. So, Roy, thank you. I appreciate it. And what an interesting coincidence that you worked at the place where I was born. You weren't there when I was born, but interesting. Let's go now to John in Pacifica, California. I know right where Pacifica is. Welcome, John.
Yeah, right on the ocean. Yeah. My question is this, regarding something that was said yesterday, and I have to kind of explain. You said that the Virgin Mary, they didn't leave for Egypt, the Holy Family, until after her purification. And if I'm correct, that's 40 days, correct?
Right, from the Nativity.
From the Nativity. And the wise men, we celebrate them as 12 days. We really don't know. I understand that. But my point being is 40 days, and that's under Jewish calendar and time. The visit from the wise men to Herod, we don't know if they, you know, sometimes they might have stayed a few days or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they traveled. I guess what I'm getting at is the Herod's doesn't know where Jesus is being born or has been born, and he doesn't.
Well, he did. He knew by way of the wise men that they were headed to Bethlehem. So
okay, that makes my question more.
I'll just add one thing though, for the benefit of those who are listening who may not know what we're talking about. This is why Herod sent his troops to Bethlehem, as opposed to Jerusalem, which was only 5 miles away. It's very close. So he specifically sent his troops to Bethlehem because he knew that it was there that this king was foretold to be born. So go ahead, John.
And Bethlehem was less, or at most, one day away from where Herod's palace was.
Well, not even that. I mean, Bethlehem is very close to Jerusalem. Yeah,
right.
It wouldn't take a whole day to get there.
My question, and I may have, in just sitting here, come up with the answer. the wise men leave, and let's say it's been a week Jewish calendar time. Herod, being as crazy and mean as he was, and threatened, why didn't he send the soldiers to kill the innocents until after they had departed? In other words, my reasoning came right now is that God must have intervened there and made him wait long enough for the Holy Family to depart for Egypt. Would that be your reasoning, or what do you think?
Yeah, and I understand your question. In other words, how do we explain that time elapse? I don't know, but I think I'm guessing, but it seems like a good guess to me that Herod he brooded and thought about it and thought about it and thought about it, and eventually he got to the point where he says, I got to do something about this. I can't just let this happen. And so it probably was not a snap decision. It probably grew on him after a time. Now we're told that the wise men, they did not go back by that same route, and that suggests that they were aware that, who knows, Herod might have tried to kill them. I mean, they probably figured out this guy's a maniac. So we know they didn't go back by way of Herod's hospitality. But that, to me, seems to be consistent with what his personality must have been like, that he brooded, and enough time went by that it could have been 6 months, a year, 18 months. I mean, it could have taken a while, but eventually he said, I've got to do something about this. That to me seems like the most likely answer, but I honestly don't know with certitude.
Personality, 40 days, even in Jewish calendar days, would have seemed like a long time, especially once you knew that the wise men weren't coming back to you.
Well, I'm not sure if he knew that, because he told them, come back. Come back. I want to bring me news. Tell me what you saw. And of course, he did that because he wanted more intel on Jesus. But the wise men were wise, and they realized this is not a good idea. So they left through a different route. Interesting stuff, John, and I do appreciate it. I love thinking about these topics. By the way, I looked it up on my trusty iPhone. And as a crow flies directly from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, I've made the drive before, and it seemed to me like it was about 5 miles. It's probably more like about 10 miles. So if you could cover 10 miles in a day on the back of a horse or a donkey, I would have guessed it would have been maybe less of a trip. But I said 5 miles, and I want to correct myself. So on the map, it's about 10 miles. Or if you take the highway, it's about 13 miles. And they didn't have those then, obviously. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Let's go now. No, a man's got to know his limitations. Boy, have I learned that lesson. So we're going to hold the calls until we come back from this quick timeout.
Man's got to know his limitations.
Where have I heard that before?
Not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture.
888-9. Cyrus, you get paid to have fun. That's what I find the most amazing thing about you and your job. Is that you're good at what you do, and you have fun doing it, and you get to play. You get to play for three hours a day. All righty then. So we're going to come back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. You are invited to participate by calling 888-914-9149. I am here for you. Need a second opinion? You have a question? Something you want to get off your chest? Give me a call. 888-914-9149. I will be right back.
Cyrus, you didn't do anything wrong.